Arenado!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Brock, you and I were talking, and Howdy is here for the first time in forever. Thank God. You and I were talking, and everything was normal volume, and Howdy hit the open, and it was like 30 times louder. Oh, my God. I legitimately reacted. It knocked my headphones off, and then Howdy and I were just giggling.
He did. You acted like someone was trying to tickle the gross. Just like, whoa! Almost fell over backwards.
Oh, my God. That was so loud and surprised the heck out of me. Oh, man. Anyway.
It's good to start with giggles in mid-June.
It is. Yeah. Good. Well, it's also good to have Howdy around. We haven't had Howdy in a podcast in weeks.
The ratings have been down. Everything has looked really bad on the metrics.
Yeah. How are you feeling? You feeling okay?
I feel great. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad to be back and normal from having COVID, my whole family having COVID. Yes. We're all fine and safe. It's all good.
You think Howdy will mention having COVID as much as I did in the last couple of episodes? Doubtful.
I don't know.
Hardly impossible, I would say. Well, I'm glad you're
feeling. Did you get a vasectomy too, Howdy, or was it just the COVID?
That's well in the past. Oh, okay. Well in the past.
We all know Howdy has a tough story about that one, yeah. By the way. You don't want Howdy's story on that.
No.
Nobody does.
Was it nice to hear from Salk, though? He made sure that he texted you because he kept a list of those friends of his.
He did.
He did,
and I was on the list that didn't connect with him. I didn't text him.
Uh-huh.
No, I didn't text him at all.
This was a sort of a guilt. This was one where I texted Howdy, like, oh, you know what? He didn't text me when I had COVID, so I'm going to one-up him and text him so that now he realizes what a terrible friend he was to me a week earlier.
Yeah, and I realized it absolutely right away as soon as I was editing his podcasts and posting them online. I realized the error of my ways and how serious it was to him, and so I decided to make sure that I wouldn't make that mistake again.
Well, yes. So, thank you, Howdy. I appreciate
it. Yes, thank you for checking on me. It meant a lot to you, so I appreciate
it. It meant a lot to me. Yes, exactly.
You checked on me. It meant a lot to you. So.
Well, you've exacted your revenge with the volume coming out of these headphones. I feel like I now have been, have a deafness in my left ear, but... Brock, hello. You and I have been arguing quite a bit the last couple of days, more than normal. And I will say, I'm not convinced you're arguing in good faith.
Oh, that's nice.
What do you think about that? I'm going to start off by throwing a haymaker. I'm going to drop an atomic bomb before we even get into
it. You're a fraud.
I am just convinced.
I don't think you're arguing in good faith.
My friend Salk, post-vasectomy, post-COVID, is now just in the wind and just can be sweet-talked and can just be moved off of positions that you've never believed in before.
Well, I think, and you can make that point in a moment. I think you're not arguing in good faith. I don't believe that
I voted for in Maura Dooley's pool.
Right.
Poll.
Yes. Yeah. I don't believe that you truly are on the side that you're arguing.
Mm.
I think you're just being argumentative.
What side am I arguing?
You've been on the Drew Lock side. Don't even try to escape
What's
that.
What
do
you
true.
Mean?
You're in
true.
Drew's camp.
You have been tacitly supporting that campaign with all sorts of things.
I would say it's been outright. You've been pro-Drew?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you. I don't believe that's what you think.
I got his name in Hebrew on my ribs, below my right nipple here in Branson. We had to get a tattoo as a team.
So you decided Hebrew?
Yes. Or Arabic, or I don't know, some symbols and Drew Lock right underneath.
You went with a Dalid, a Raish.
Yes.
And okay.
Yeah, uh-huh.
One of those. Yud probably at the end.
You're not buying
it. I just dropped three Hebrew letters right here on the box.
That's good.
That was good.
What do you think about that?
That's super impressive.
I haven't been in Hebrew school in a while. I just dropped three letters. What's up?
Yes. Way to go. It's been tacit, you think, Howdy?
I don't think you said the words Drew Lock should be the quarterback of the Seahawks. But I think you've been painting a lot of different arguments that lead you to that conclusion.
I think that's fair. I think that is very, very well said. I think I am in the information gathering stage, much like Pete and John are doing in the final week as the youngsters are wrapping up OTAs with a little conditioning, a little passing school. They're calling it this week down there at the VMAC, and then they'll go away for 5 weeks.
Wait a minute.
What?
The Seahawks are putting on a passing school for their starting quarterback
competitors?
a passing school.
Are they learning how to pass, or are they teaching other people how to do it?
Can you think of a more demeaning way to define a quarterback competition than to put a couple of guys in their mid to late 20s and early 30s into a passing school after they've been in the NFL for multiple years?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's school. Maybe it's passing camp. No. It's just some
well,
label.
Camp, like a summer camp.
Maybe some
it's
label.
Maybe it's passing time.
I'm wearing a passing time shirt right now.
Right over your Hebrew
right
tattoo.
Over my Drew Lock tattoo on my rib cage. Yes, I am. I think that's right, Howdy. I wanted to use these 5-6 weeks of camp. I'm trying to dig in. I've reached out to some of the people that I trust over there and tried to gather my own information. And, you know, I had said to you guys pretty clearly when the offseason started, they should and they're going to give Gino and Drew every opportunity to show them over these 5 weeks what they've got. And after these 5 weeks, they will go away. The players will go away. I'm sure Pete and John will hopefully get some time away, but very quickly they will come back. And some of these games of chicken around the league with Baker and with Jimmy G and others are going to come to a conclusion, and they're going to have to make a decision. And I would be fascinated. As much as any time in recent memory to be inside those walls and to hear John and to hear Shane and to hear Pete and to hear Trent Kirshner and to hear those power brokers are going to make this decision about that position, what they want to do in the 2022 season, because I do believe that decision will be made preceding training camp.
All right. Well, let's take what we know of those people, right? John Schneider, his biggest stated opinion on the quarterback position is it should be somebody who tilts the room, tilts the field, right? Of the four guys that we're talking about,
Baker
tilts the room more than anybody else.
Yep.
Who's number two? Jimmy. A guy that Lewis Riddick told us is renowned by his teammates. It might be Jimmy, by the way. He might be the answer. He might be number one. Not necessarily on the field. Baker probably has the most ability to tilt the field, but tilting the room, it may be the best looking guy maybe in the world, and his ability to lead and be respected by his peers, etc. There's probably they're probably splitting that, tilting the field versus tilting the room. Right?
Yeah.
It's not Gino, and it's not Drew Lock.
No, I don't think on the field. I'd have a hard time on the field with that, with Jimmy, just because multiple times they took the ball out of his
hand. I didn't say he was the one who tilted it the most on the field.
Okay.
I think you're right. Baker Mayfield tilts the field the most with the upside.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's tilting the room and the building, it's probably... Well, it's Jimmy in terms of the leadership stuff. It's Baker in terms of just sheer force of personality.
I would agree, and charisma and everything else,
yes.
both up and down, both ways. I mean, it's been an erratic, wild ride for him. And
who makes better commercials? Is it Baker with the Progressive?
Yes.
Or is it Jimmy Garoppolo with his grandmother?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm going to say Baker wins the commercial game.
I mean, Jimmy looks better in the commercials. I'll say that.
Jimmy looks better, but yeah, I'm going to say the commercial game, Baker has won it. So,
right.
Okay.
So, from John's perspective, it should be one of those two guys.
Yep.
From Pete's perspective.
But hold on. But there's one little caveat there.
What?
There's one thing that John does love, and that is young players. There's one thing that John does love, and that is getting the most out of people when they've been counted out in other places. That is trading for Chris Clemons. That is trading for Marshawn Lynch. That is trading for better or worse with Jimmy and Percy.
Baker Mayfield. He's 27. He's been counted out.
And seeing if there's an opportunity in young people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be a little bit more Baker.
Yeah.
And then Drew puts my guy.
I mean, that kind of washes all three of those guys, Drew Lock, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Baker Mayfield. All three of them have been given up on and passed over.
Yeah, but Jimmy's older. He's 31, right?
Correct.
I mean, whereas the other two guys are in their 20s, 25 and 27. So I think if you look at it, if we have to say who's John's guy, it's probably Baker just based on some of what we know about John. I'm not saying that's necessarily what he would say right now, but from our outside perspective here, I would say from John's perspective, it's Baker. What's Pete Carroll's stated philosophy? Compete every day, right? If you're competing every day, who gives you the best opportunity to compete right now? To me, this is the quickest answer of any of them. It's Jimmy.
Well, you're
going to
say Jimmy.
Yes, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, Lewis totally swayed you, Lewis.
Yes.
Science 100%
true. Yes. But also looking at his numbers.
You were leading the jurors box. And I got this, guys. Okay, I'm gonna make the decision for all of us right here.
Well, I don't see how there's any argument about anybody else right now. I mean, maybe Baker, but it's not going to be the other two guys. In terms of who could just win more games for your team right now.
He can throw as pretty of a pass as anyone in the NFL. And with some of the weapons that they have out there, when you think of Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Noah Fant, two good running backs, just drafted two bookend offensive tackles, building up the defense, Jimmy G is like the piece that they're missing.
That's from NFL Live. He went probably even deeper on it in the interview I did with him on Tuesday. But, I mean, he loved Jimmy. He's like, look, this guy's been in the NFC Championship game two of the last 3 years, went to a Super Bowl, nearly won one, nearly went back to the same Super Bowl. Like, the other guys haven't done anything.
If Hasselbeck had hair, Matt, do you think he could have been a Jimmy Garoppolo? You think it's a pretty good comp?
You made that comp earlier. What were you trying? What's the comp there? Because Justin first took it as like a guy that was like given up on somewhere else, and I don't know where I saw that.
Yeah, just a guy that knows how to play the game. Matt knew how to play the game, and get the most out of what he had, realized what he was and what he wasn't, could extend plays to a degree. Mm-hmm. Certainly Matt did more when he was younger. I think Jimmy before a knee and shoulder and everything else, but can distribute the ball, has some limitations. I mean, Jimmy doesn't throw a great deep ball. And, that wasn't Matt's strengths, but, you know, can be a high accuracy guy, high completion guy. You know, that's who Pete inherited and kept around for a year. And I think Matt would have loved, if there wasn't a lockout and everything else, would have loved to have continued kind of in the program and see what could have been built
good
around
comp.
Him.
All right. Good.
I think he's a pretty good comp other than,
and
Matt
I don't think that's what Pete wants long term. Right. He wants somebody who can throw the deep ball. That's part of his offensive philosophy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if you're Pete Carroll, you're trying to compete every day and you are, 70 years old? And I'm not saying he's on thin ice. He's not. But you just moved on from your quarterback. You just tried to get Deshaun Watson. You are committed to winning every single, as many games as you can all the time. And you don't believe that you're taking a full step back.
Yep.
You're going with Jimmy Garoppolo, right?
And these 5 weeks, by the way, have not only given you an evaluation of your quarterbacks, they've given you an evaluation of your group, of your team, of those young offensive tackles.
So who do you think Pete prefers of these four people? Put them in order. Who's Pete's top two? Oh.
Pete's number one is Baker Mayfield.
Is it not? Yes, just because of the personality.
Now, I'll tell you, the only two things that make me wonder whether or not Pete has outright dismissed him is how much he's talked about competition and Baker Mayfield and how he's been handling this whole situation and sitting out and not wanting to be there and making it public and not protecting his own team. Like, all that kind of stuff is really right up his alley.
They didn't give him the opportunity to compete. They went out and spent, an ungodly amount
of money. Baker had a choice to make in how he handled that situation. Mm. And to Pete Carroll, I can see him looking at it and say, yeah, he just revealed everything of who he really is.
I don't know about that.
Did you ever see that podcast, by the way, that Baker did on the couch?
Yes.
Was that uncomfortable to you?
Yes.
A little odd.
That's the Pete Carroll stuff
I think Pete would say this is more like a guy holding out of training camp, which has, not that he loves it, but like I don't think that's the same to him as a guy who won't run a 40. Like I think it's
Do you
like,
think that's what he wants
business.
On the heels of Russell over the last 10 years? Because Russell won the easiest last two or three years with Russell.
Yeah, but Brock, isn't this the same guy that you got into an argument about over Johnny Manziel?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, if he wanted Johnny Manziel, Baker's better in every way, right? A better player and not as crazy.
Baker's personality is in some ways the antithesis to Russell Wilson. All talk, all bravado, get out in front, look at me, I will show you the way, I will lead you into darkness, don't you even worry about me. I will be as confident in front of all of you as anyone. You will never have to guess who I am. This is
like
who I am.
Pete might love that.
Yeah.
Right, I go back and forth, but I think Pete, I'm with Howdy, as much as I hate to say it, I think Pete's number one would be Baker, followed by Jimmy, but I think I could flip-flop them depending on which part of Pete's personality is dominant, right?
Howdy, can you go back to...
But it's not Drew or Gino.
Howdy, please, do a little day. It's so good to have you back, Howdy. Healthy, off of COVID, off the vasectomy, everything else you've been enduring. Can you please find the sound of Pete talking about Drew Lock?
Drew Lock.
We love him so much, we're going to have Geno Smith start with the ones? Like, it just doesn't even make sense. What are we talking about?
No, please, though, please. On that press conference, I think that was February, when they finally had a press conference that could talk about the official trade.
It was during spring training. It was March.
Yeah, it was March. It was the first league year, first day of the new league year, when they were able to speak about it. Please find me some of that Drew Lock sound.
Drew Lock's a new quarterback coming into our program. Drew, we loved him in the draft. Our guys were thrilled about him coming up. We're going to take a shot. Maybe we could get a pick and get him. We didn't. He goes in his first year, finally plays his first five games, and he goes 4-1 in his first season, his rookie season. All the promise, all that you would hope to see, the numbers and stuff, show he's going to have a great run in his career. And the next 2 years didn't work out very well. He battled his tail off and competed his tail off, but it hasn't worked out. Is this a second chance for Drew Lock? Heck yeah, it is.
We love Drew Lock.
We love him so much that when we get to minicamp, he's going to work exclusively with the twos, while Geno Smith works with the ones.
And by the way, in 2019, to pay off, he was 64% passer, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks, went 4-1 as a starter. And then Vic Fangio fired, curmudgeon Vic fired the OC because the OC wouldn't, fire his QB coach. The OC was loyal. It's like, nah, I ain't doing that. You know, we're 4-1, Drew's our guy. Nope, going to fire you, going to bring new people in. Pat Shermer, old school, old guard, bad team, bad situation. And a very brutal second year. And then Vic does what? Gives up on Drew and signs Teddy and calls it a competition, which it never was. It was going to be Teddy Bridgewater's job to try to save Vic's job. So it was not a healthy, good dynamic whatsoever in Denver.
And Pete thought so highly of him that he started Geno Smith ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else you can say. Like
not
that,
a good look.
To me, that's the end of the conversation.
And not even splitting reps by the end of it.
Nope.
Yep,
he was with the ones,
right?
While Drew was with the twos.
That's why I got my tattoo in henna. Okay, to be fair, I got it in henna.
All right, it comes out.
Yes.
Who does Shane
Waldron? About 2.5 weeks.
Who's the best fit for Shane Waldron? It's Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think we even need to debate that. So when you start talking about the power brokers, Brock, I don't know what world Drew or Geno comes out on top here.
Yeah.
It's all three of them would want either Baker or Jimmy Garoppolo in some order.
Yes. And then
I believe you do too.
Well, and then it comes down to I'm not as enamored with either of those. I'm not as enamored with Jimmy G, and I've watched him multiple times against the Seahawks, and I've thought at times you can get to him. You can beat him up and you can totally take him out of his game. And there was never really a game other than maybe his first when he came in, like second half. It was kind of a weird deal after he got traded and came in, threw a couple touchdowns against the Seahawks. I was like, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem in the division. And it's not been. And I felt like, and the 49ers even said it, like, yeah, he's not our guy. He's not our guy. We're looking to replace him and ultimately have and drafted a young guy in Trey Lance and ultimately moving on from him. So, to me, there's a reason they moved on.
They drafted Trey Lance, they still played him another year.
Because Trey wasn't ready.
No, but I mean, they played him another year, and he nearly took him to the Super Bowl.
Well, because his team this year.
I understand
year
that. I'm not
very good.
I'm not saying he was the biggest reason why they got there, but I think that's a little bit unfair to say, well, I'm not that enamored with him. It's not like I think either of these guys are going to the Hall of Fame. This is what's open to you right now.
Yep.
Right. You don't have a direct access to a franchise quarterback. That's not available. We're talking about really four names that are, I mean, if you want to throw Cam Newton's name on there, I guess five. I'm not, you know, I was down that road a little bit last year as a backup. I'm not going down that road now. You know, we talked about Colin Kaepernick and something. Essentially, you've got four names that are available to you. The two guys that are here and the two guys likely to get cut because of their team situation. So it's not a matter of, do you think they're great? Do you think they're perfect? Do you think they compare to the best quarterbacks in the game? It's how do they compare to each other in the situation you're in right now?
Yes.
And
all of that in fantasy football works beautifully. And this is maybe tacit or not tacit, or what's the opposite of tacit?
Direct.
Is there a word? Can I use tacit ill tacitly? Is there any way to make tacit the opposite or no? It just has to be. It has to be direct. It has to be a totally different word than tacit. Because here is where, like, tacitly it comes alive a little bit, because this is not fantasy football. This is not just one-year operators. This is not just any other position. This is not filling a tight end or linebacker safety. This is This is your quarterback. This is your leader. This is your face. This is, and even though Pete is not the biggest pro quarterback, you know, he's got to be everything, just as Mayor Harrell wasn't either, as he joined the team yesterday and said specifically he's not a quarterback guy. And Pete, I think, enjoyed that, as did a number of the teammates. This is the most important position on the football team. It is. And while I think it's easy to say, just a 1 year deal, just a one year little looky loo.
What is Drew Lock in?
Is it? I mean, Drew Lock.
Same as what Drew Lock has.
Absolutely.
He's got 1 year left in his looky loo.
Yeah, he's on the fourth year and making $1 million, and this is a perfect situation. And for Geno, it's $1 million. It's a perfect situation. You take these two on. And A, how you're going to go about getting them, because they're both under contract with another team right now. And as I said to you on your show this week, ultimately the game of chicken's going to end. The deadline of training camp is going to, I think, crystallize some of this. But, you know, there is a trade market. There are other teams, Carolina and others, that also need to upgrade their room. So A, you've still got to acquire them. And then B, when you do, and whether or not they're cut by their other teams, then it becomes, okay, you think these guys are just, I'll be league minimum. Absolutely not.
Well, I didn't say they're going to be league minimum.
Absolutely not.
But they're not going to get $20 million either.
I mean, let's flesh this out, because I've been having a hard time listening to you, Brock, for the last 2 weeks of this, because I don't understand what you think is going to be the market pay. Like, when these guys find their new teams, whether it's the Seahawks or not this year, how much money do you think that they're going
to
be
making? Hold on. There's only two guys, and there's only two teams.
Those two. So how much money do you think that they're going to make on their one-year deal or whatever deal they sign when they leave, you know?
That depends on an agent by the name of Larry Leverage. And he's a big agent and a powerful agent. And it depends how much in the other situations around the league with Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson and all of those things in Carolina, and how many teams have been kind of laying in the weeds as well, like Seattle's tried to do. Like Pete has tried to do, right, to quiet all of the noise and everything else, say, no, we're just fine. How many other teams are out there? And ultimately, you know, how can these agents leverage that situation?
Yeah, I don't think there's that many. Here's the problem. For Baker Mayfield, I think there are two teams that are possibilities, Seattle and Carolina. For Jimmy Garoppolo, I think there are maybe three teams that are possibilities, Seattle, Carolina, and Cleveland. I don't see any other real opportunities for them out there. So as much as you want to play the leverage game, there's two guys and at the most three teams. There's just not a lot of room to play leverage. And unless one of them wants to go take a backup deal somewhere, and I don't know why they would want to go do that when they have an opportunity to start. I don't. You're not going to have to pay these guys that much money. Yeah, maybe it's $10, $12 million. It's not nothing. I'm not telling you got to, like, you know, you're right. You're not going to get them for league minimum, nor should you. And if you pay your guy league minimum, then you're telling the world and your team exactly who he is, which is, by the way, what they did with Geno, right? It's a non-guaranteed contract. They can cut him.
Yep.
So, you pay Jimmy Garoppolo $10, $12 million, something like that. I don't have the exact number. It's not 20 to 25.
If you trade a seventh-round pick for Baker Mayfield, he makes $18 million no matter what.
Right, or they cut him and you pay him, you know, 12 or whatever it is you want to pay him. But I don't know, man. I every time you talk through this, I feel like you're about to make the argument for someone who's not in the room right now.
Yeah,
like, this is the most important position. Yep. Are you really going to trust it to a one-year deal? This is the most important position. You're really going to trust it to Drew Lock or Geno Smith?
Yeah, I guess where I get a little stuck in talking through this, and it's oversimplifying, but it's just I want to want that guy. I want to want Russell Wilson as they did 12 years ago. So we would not really have had to do this or 10 years ago for the last 10 years.
That's fair.
I really want to want them. And I don't, and I feel like Jimmy G, okay, he'd be a Band-Aid for a year and or maybe two. Now, here's the other, not to talk out of both sides of my mouth, here's the other positive that Jimmy brings you, maybe certainly more than the other three, because I think Baker is unstable, and I think he's up and down, and I think he's mercurial, and I think he's many of those things. Mm-hmm. Jimmy is super solid. He would be excellent in the role, and he would be what, frankly, Teddy Bridgewater was in Denver when I made the argument in that Denver market, which was he is a perfect litmus test for the rest of your team. Mm. He's a pro.
He shows you what else you've got.
And you are going to be able to see and truly learn what you have with the others.
Yep.
And that is why I would lean, of these four, I would lean to Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's a really good argument. Right.
You know, if the deal is right, I would lean Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, I'm glad to hear you come over to the side of reality. That's good to hear.
But if Jimmy Garoppolo says, you know what, I've made millions and millions of dollars, and I'm not going to play for $10 million. I'm not going to play for $12 million. You're going to have to guarantee me $25 million.
Yeah,
it's going to be a
2 or 3 year
deal.
I don't think he's got the leverage for that. And by the way, Lewis Riddick, who started this whole thing, was adamant that that's not what he was talking about either. He's like, hey, I'm not talking about paying this guy 20 plus.
Right.
Like, you get him in the 10.
But what if, you know, the strongest Larry leverage argument is Jimmy Garoppolo says, I'm good then. Then, you know what? I'm good looking and I've got ads and I've made 50, 70 million bucks.
If that's the direction he goes, so be it.
Yep.
I mean, that's fine.
And there's a part of me that thinks he could, too. There's a part of me, again, where I just don't want... I don't think
he's going to do that, Brock. Okay. I mean, as good-looking as he is, I don't know if he can act. I mean, like, he's got a job right now playing quarterback, and he's got an opportunity to start for $12 to $15 million.
He's
going to say
ACL,
no?
And he's off of shoulder injuries.
Brock,
if he's given
an opportunity to start for $12 to $15 million, you're telling me he's going to say no if that's the only offer he's got in the NFL? That doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
I don't buy that. That doesn't work. And the last thing on this that I think I got to say is I've got, you know, you were trying to use my previous phrases against me earlier. And I keep coming back to yours and the idea of you can't fool the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how you can build culture. You can compete every day. You can value competition and winning and all of the things that Pete holds dear. And not make a legitimate run at one of these two guys that are available. I don't know how you look the rest of your team in the eye and say, we're doing everything we can do, and we're asking you to do the same if you don't go out and get one of two players who are almost universally considered to be better than what you've got.
Mm-hmm. Nope, I think that is, I think that's fair. And as I said to you at the start of this 20 minutes ago, I would love to be inside that room. I would love to also think in as they look on their draft board, Mike, for April, which they've already done work with and work for, and say, you know what, man, we've got three guys that we really love in this upcoming draft. Or maybe they say, yeah, we got one, you know, or maybe it's we don't really like any of these guys. CJ Stroud.
But does this affect that, do you think? Do you think that who you get this year affects what you do next year that much?
Well, if Jimmy G comes here and wins 10 or 11 games, he's going to be your guy. So, and you know,
maybe
he's
he brought the Niners to a Super Bowl and he drafted someone else the next year.
Yeah, but they had to pay him and take care of him and give him a long-term extension and kind of run that all the way through to the point where
I don't know, man. Once you've traded Russell Wilson in his prime or somewhere near it, I don't know that you've got to commit to anybody, even if he brings you to a Super Bowl. Yeah. I mean, like, I think they've pretty well now said that they're not going to do that. So, I don't know. I think that they've got to bring in as many people as they can. Talk to Burt Breer this week. He had a good take on this as well. Mm-hmm. Basically saying if you're looking to win the most number of games in 2022, you get Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking to just, you know, the scattershot approach that brought them Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn, Tavares Jackson, et cetera, you go get Baker because of the upside.
Yep.
And I understand both of those arguments and I can buy them. I just have a lot of trouble buying what's here right now. So... you mentioned you'd like to be in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to be at the Ascend Prime Steak and Sushi 2022 Epicurean Summer Soiree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you like?
I am epic.
Do you know where they don't have that? They don't have that in Branson, Missouri.
I bet they don't.
I bet they don't.
And everything you're going to read off this menu, I couldn't find in Branson, Missouri. So go ahead.
They don't have sushi in Branson?
Sushi. No,
Lake
I'm not
sushi.
Going that way.
Yeah. Lake
sushi.
What?
I was a trout.
God. Brock, Ascend Prime Steak and Sushi's innovative team of tastemakers are doing a celebration showcasing the restaurant's greatest hits and whimsical new bites, and they're doing it on July 4th from 6 to 11 p.m. in honor of Independence Day and Ascend's 4th anniversary. The award-winning restaurant will host guests for a behind-the-scenes experience of elevated culinary and imaginative libations in this all-inclusive Epicurean soiree backdropped by the Bellevue Family Fourth Fireworks Show after the sun goes down. That's about as good a view as you're possibly going to get. So, 9 different experiential stations, over 20 distinctly Ascend food and beverage offerings, demonstrations, distinguishing preparation on display, One of a kind photo moments brought to you by 425 Magazine. You can dance the night away with top 40 hits performed by the After Party. It's a whole thing, man. All for the fourth. How does that sound for you?
Real good.
Yeah.
Real good. I can come off the USFL championship game and fly right to
Seattle. Are you doing the USFL championship?
Of course I am.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Of course I am.
Wow. You're back for more USFL action. Impressive. Yes. You can get tickets, Brock, at ascendprime.com. You gave away a lot to get Jesse Winker, and so far he's been, so far, and I'm not saying this is going to last forever, so far he's been the worst move of the Jerry DePoto era by a large margin.
Ooh, the whole
so far.
Era?
So, yes. And the, you know, look, that's only 2 months into his career here. There's ample opportunity for that to turn around, and I still have a lot of hope that it will. But considering what he had done before he got here versus what he's done so far, I mean, it's not even close. He's fallen off a table. It's crazy.
Yeah. So is it fundamentals? Is his swing just long and he's just trying to hit home runs and he just doesn't care to shorten it? Is it ballpark influence? We know Cincinnati is a very friendly confines. We knew coming into this season that his splits, righty lefty, were pretty disastrous. I mean,
but
that
they've
was
been the opposite this year.
Correct.
His problem's been
so
against righties.
So what in the world?
I don't know. I don't know enough.
It can't be all new pitching in the American.
I don't think
League.
It's that.
There were
no
studs in the National League and filthy stuff that he had to see in the National League and his division as well.
Like I'm sure the ballpark's a little part of it, but that doesn't explain all of it.
Is it just too cold?
I don't.
April and May in Seattle. It's just in June.
I don't know, man.
Just
I mean,
too chilly.
Cincinnati on the water. I don't know enough to be able to tell you what's wrong fundamentally, if that's an issue. I'm not going to pretend like I do. My guess is that he's pressing. And I'm basing that on meeting him and sort of what I've heard about his personality. Jesse Winker seems like one of the best guys in the world. Seems like. Don't know the guy too well. I mean, I've met him a couple of times down at spring training. His affability, likability, friendliness for a ball player is in the top 1%. Seriously.
Yeah, he just loves being a ball player. He loves the big leagues. He loves playing.
Or just
baseball.
Loves being on a team.
And like, I think he just loves life. Like, he just seems like he loves people and being around them and talking to them and being friendly and happy. Like, he seems like an all-time great guy. Right? I don't know enough about him. Who knows? Maybe he's got skeletons in his closet. He's
kind of the boy
like,
howdy of baseball.
Exactly.
I mean, everything that you just
it's
said.
Perfect.
It's not the word I would use.
Perfectly
not,
so.
Not the
loving life,
not the
loving
comp.
People, loving relationships, loving the job. I mean,
like that, but likable. So, yes, I see where you're going. No, honestly, doesn't he seem like the most affable dude in the world?
Yes.
I'm going to guess, and this is just me guessing, that he got here. He was unbelievably happy to be out of Cincinnati, which from a baseball perspective is a dumpster fire. He believed right off the bat that there was an opportunity for this team and that he had a chance to really take the lead and help get them over the top. And I don't know if it's pressure that he's putting on himself or what, but it seems to have gotten in his head and affected his ability to play. I don't know how else to describe a player with his level and resume of success struggling to this extent. We're not talking about Justin Smoke, who was a prospect who didn't make it when he got here.
Right.
We're talking about a guy who's been one of the best players in the league for a few
years. How many years?
Who's not even close.
How many years, Howdy, under his belt did he have of... I know we looked at it.
Three good ones, four total.
Four total, three good ones.
Yeah,
three
his
good
rookie ones year, and then three years that he's been like a good player.
Like around a 900 OPS guy.
I think last year was 950.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the best in modern baseball. 950 is, it's not Barry Bonds in his prime, but it's like one of the best players in the game.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. I mean, even Ty France right now is kind of flirting around that number for the first few months of the season has been just terrific. He did that for 3 years in Cincinnati and has come here and he's now in the low 600s.
Yes.
That just doesn't make sense.
Right. So, could it be physical? Sure. Could it be playing hurt? Sure. Something like that. But what makes sense to me more than anything else is that it's just
it's what Titus
pressing.
Is going through in Branson, Missouri. We had this conversation last night after a couple strikeouts, you know, and he's really upset, very negative self-talk. And I said to him, and one of the dads on the team's a great teacher and swing guy and, you know, watches these kids. And he's like, hey, man, everything is there. You're just trying to hit it out of the ballpark. You know, they're playing on these 12U fields. He's watching some of the kids hit some bombs over the 245, and he's just yanking his shoulder, pulling his head, not on it. He's just trying too hard. I said, hey, buddy, this is where baseball becomes one of the most difficult games of anything that you play. You're going to put pads on and play tackle football in August. And when you get angry at outside linebacker, it can be a good thing. And you can use that violence and that adrenaline and that pent up anger to go hit people and to run over people. And when you play basketball and you miss a few shots, you know what you can do? You can be Mike Salk and get under Dan Gantzerich, and you can put your butt right in his thigh, and you can drive him out to the bench as best you can. And you can use some of that just anger and just some of that. Baseball, you can't do that, buddy.
Nope.
And it's actually the exact opposite.
It's counterproductive.
It's counterproductive. And it's going to be a great blessing or curse, because you're going to have to learn it, you know, and you're going to have to just trust that bat. And I've asked a couple of the baseball guys that I know who just watch the Mariners on a nightly basis, and that's what they say. They say that swing is just long and getting longer because he's trying to, because he can see the exit velo. He sees the data. He sees all those numbers that everybody else is seeing and writing about and is now public, right? And it's like, man, I got to hit the ball hard.
Yeah, but that stuff's fixable. I mean, like, if that's what it is, I would certainly hope that it's fixable. Right?
I would think so.
Brock,
I
mean, you brought up his numbers. Can I just read you the OPS numbers just for a moment? They'll drive you crazy, but
okay.
As a rookie, OPS 904. Next year, 836, 830, 932, 949.
Whew.
622.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no that's not ballpark, that's not lineup. It's not. Could a ballpark account for 50 points, 75 points, even 100 points? Mm-hmm. Could he have gone from 900 to 800? Sure. Even 750.
Yep.
Not 622. No. I mean, like, that's a completely different player.
Yep.
That's a major league all-star down to a minor league player. That's at the age of 28 when he's right in the middle of his prime.
In a place that he loves. If we go back to the opening of the season.
So strange.
Didn't he call it the Electric Factory?
Yes.
Wasn't that him talking about, man, I just have a new lease on life. I've never been in an environment like this. I'm around great teammates, a great culture.
He's been close to a 300 hitter most years. He's hitting 208. It's like a different human being has taken over his body.
Okay, how are you sitting on something? I can feel it.
If this is a mentality thing, I'll go down that road with you and say, in Cincinnati, was he the guy? No.
No, Joey Votto.
He never was. It was Joey Votto.
Yeah.
With the Mariners offseason and what they did this offseason, is he the guy they brought in the offseason?
That's a good question.
Yes.
In some ways, yes. They asked him to hit third and all that right off the bat.
He was the guy they were looking for, middle of the order bat. The entire league and every fan base knew that's what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And they pinpointed Jesse Winker as floor is high, ceiling is even more, and we're going to roll him out and say, this is our impact bat that we're going to put in.
Mm-hmm.
So you bring Jesse Winker out of Cincinnati, a place that doesn't care, that doesn't compete, that he's been protected by Joey Votto's entire career. He's only hit against right-handed pitching his entire time there. And then you put him in and said, you are going to save this lineup, and we're putting you in the middle. You are better than you've been, and you are going to take us to the playoffs with this team.
That's a good point. That may very well be a part of it as well.
Yep.
That's certainly a possibility.
But is it hard to grasp? Because I think there's three all-stars on this
how
team.
To even that shouldn't account for this big a difference.
It has for Marcus Semien. Until the last month, he was just a complete disaster after basically winning the MVP.
That's fair.
These guys, when they have to move circumstances and their mentality changes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is a tough situation to go in. And this is, again, another one of the reasons why I was crying from the mountaintops. You cannot stop getting middle-of-the-order bats for this team. And you tried to pull somebody who is not quite there yet and put him in a position he's uncomfortable. And this is what you get in some ways.
Brock, well, you said three all-stars.
Yeah, hold on one second, though. Do you think that then, Howdy, carries over? Because let's be honest about those names we're talking about. Chris Bryant They're killing in Colorado. I think there was some number like 470,000 in the bat he's making. He had a bad night of sleep. His back is wrecked. Total non-contributor. Baez has been a disaster. I think he's hitting under 200. Trevor Story, right? Other than the Mariners, that he's hitting in the 220s and is not, I mean, could you make that case that many of these guys that in names that we reference this offseason, Semien, have gone places, been put with higher expectations, and are cowering or floundering underneath the weight of that?
You can. You absolutely can. A lot of those teams that sign those bad players, though, are performing better than anyone thought they would. The Rangers are better than anyone thought they were going to be. The Rockies, even without Chris Bryant, they're a better team than anyone thought they were going to be. They're in the same situation the Mariners are. Of all the teams that made these major additions, most of them are supposed to be bad even after those additions. And the Mariners are the one team in that category who they were expected to do more, and they've underperformed because they didn't go as far as people expected they would go in the offseason.
Mm-hmm. So, and then you wonder about the message to the players on the team and how they took it.
They all have to press now to get themselves up to that level because they don't have enough protection. They didn't get what they needed in the offseason.
And yet, the funniest thing about this Mariners season is that there are times where you look at the numbers and you're like, why aren't they better?
Yep.
Brock, you just said they've got three All-Stars potentially. I'm going to assume you mean Logan Gilbert, who has certainly pitched that way. And
Top 10 in most statistical categories you're going to look at, whip and ERA and innings and everything else.
Scott was pretty clear this week after his start saying that's an All-Star, right, if he keeps doing this. And I talked to Logan earlier today. I really enjoy talking to him, and he was pretty into that. Like, yeah, that would be a huge honor for me to go to the All-Star game. So that was cool.
Yep.
Ty France has certainly put up All-Star kind of numbers.
Correct. I don't think there's another first baseman even close in the American League.
Vlad is probably going to win he'll win the voting.
Yes, but he's 60 points under average, far under OPS, doesn't play first base anywhere near the way France does.
So Ty France, whether he is or not, should be an All-Star.
Yep.
And then I'm trying to think of who you believe. Is it Julio?
Mm-mm.
Who's your third All-Star?
JP.
Oh, JP Crawford, obviously. Yep. Yeah.
He's 20th in regulars in OPS plus.
Yeah. No, you're right. JP has been pretty bad. I mean, I think Bogarts he's fourth overall as a fourth in WAR at shortstop in the league. So,
yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you've got three All-Stars. You've got JP that's more than living up to a contract.
And I don't know that Julio's an All-Star this year, but he's played at a level that
his May was an All-Star.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's working his way into that, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Offensively, defensively, command, middle of the lineup, protecting, doing all of that.
Baseball and stolen bases.
And then you talk to Keith. You talk to people around the league, and first of all, they're like, well, look at the team and where they rank in OPS and WRC plus, some of these other things. Talk to Jeff Passan today, and he's like, well, it's all about their pitching, not about their not about their hitting. And then you're like, you watch it, and he may be right about the numbers. The numbers may show you that the pitching's been the problem. You can't watch this team night in, night out, and not come away thinking it's the lineup. Now, I will grant you, I don't watch enough other games around the league, and I know that hitting is down in general, so maybe I need to readjust my expectation
optics
level.
Mm-hmm.
But you watch this team and their failure to come up with big hits. They are getting traffic. It's not like a few years ago when you were watching them with, like, you know, Logan Morris, like some of the guys that were, when they were bad, real bad, and you were like, dude, they don't have a chance. Every guy strikes out. They don't have a chance to get on. Like, they're terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like that. They're actually getting on base a lot, and they get traffic. They're just not doing what they did last year, which is sort of cluster-lucking them together and coming up with the big hit and the big moment compared to other teams in baseball right now.
Yep.
The starting pitching, I think, has been pretty good. I mean, who on the starting staff are you going to torch? No one. I mean, other than Logan, they haven't been dynamite. But even in Robbie Ray's struggles, he's been pretty good. I mean, good, like, okay. Marco's been pretty good. Flexen, unfortunately, has gone up against Verlander four times. But he's been pretty good. Kirby's been a great rookie and pretty good.
Yeah.
They've had some issues in the bullpen, for sure. And that's a real conversation. But it sure seems like it's more about the lineup and those. And I wonder if that's just about some timely hitting and the lack of pop when you don't have Mitch Haniger or Kyle Lewis. And I know that you're never really banking on Kyle Lewis, but without those two guys, it's really, they don't have a lot of pop.
Yep.
And you saw it on the Tuesday night win over the Twins. When you do get pop, the game's a lot easier, mm-hmm. right? When Suarez and France both hit 2-run home runs,
yep.
the game's a lot easier to play.
Yep.
And you just don't have a lot of that.
Nope. And that's probably back to our where we started this conversation. You know, and not to pin it all and put it all on one guy. I mean, Jared Kelnick had a brutal April, and, you know, he was supposed to be some of that guy this season. He was supposed to take that step forward and add some of that pop, some of that,
that
charge. And that didn't help. And obviously Mitch goes down with yet another injury, and it continues to linger and be an issue. Kyle has a concussion that continues to linger and be an issue. And those are some of the guys that do have some of the explosion in that bat that do sound a little bit different than their peers, than just another guy around the league. And to have all of that absent in this lineup, and on top of it, career historically bad performance here from Mr. Winker, you know, sits you where you're sitting, 6 games under .500 as we tape this.
Hey, so there's been speculation. I don't know that this is true, and I'm not going to claim that it is, but there's been some speculation that when Haniger got hurt, right, it was right when he came back from COVID, that maybe there was some level of connection. I have no idea if that's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
But right after I got, did I tell you I had COVID? Right after I came off the COVID IL myself, I've also hurt my ankle. Now, obviously, Mitch and I keep in similar shape. I think we would all agree that we treat our bodies similarly, like the temples
very
that they are.
Very similar athleticism.
Yes. But I've also hurt my ankle. I don't know how I did it. I woke up and my ankle hurt. So do you think that there's a connection there, or am I making this up?
Howdy, how's your ankles?
My ankles are just fine.
Okay.
Just fine.
Are you a little weaker coming off of that? Absolutely. Could you be a little bit more vulnerable? Sure. But man, does it just stink, because they could use Haniger. He is, to what you just said there, Mike, he goes, you know, 3 or 4 games and could be 1 for 12, but then he has 2 or 3 games where he hits bombs, and he is just that margin and just that difference maker that they could certainly utilize. So bummer for him, big bummer for Kyle Lewis as well, because concussions are no fun, impossible to predict, and both of those bats would sure be nice to get into the lineup sooner rather than later.
I want to ask you about something kind of different here, Brock. It's something that sort of dawned on me today, and I wanted to ask you about. I'll do it in a moment. I will quickly tell you, when you and I taped last week, it was a little funky. I talked a little bit about this on the show yesterday. But right in between finishing the morning show, and you and I usually tape this almost right after I'm done, get off the air. Get the call from Heather. She had texted me right at the end of the show. I was like, hey, call me as soon as the show ends, which doesn't usually happen. And so, like, you start worrying about the kids, whatever. And I called her, and thankfully, right off the bat, she's like, hey, everything is okay, but your dad had a heart attack. And, like, you know, you definitely, like, feel your whole, you know, heart sink a little bit in that moment. And thankfully, by the time I heard about it, it was a couple hours later. And, you know, he was already resting comfortably in the ICU, and, you know, he was okay at that point, because I think I really would have freaked out if, you know, I had not known all of that stuff. But yeah, so you and I were able to kind of go on. There's nothing I could do in that moment. So you and I did the show, and I wasn't really ready to talk about it because I didn't have any information. But the story is so crazy. He goes to his lawyer's office, literally with my mom, to work on their will. They're going to work on, like, will and, like, you know,
estate planning
and what happens if he's incapacitated and all that type of stuff. They're going to, like, you know, work on all that. And he gets to the waiting room, and they go into the conference room to wait for the lawyer to come in. And he's like, I don't feel good. I feel maybe it's indigestion, my stomach. I feel exhausted. I think I need to lie down on the floor. And, like, gets down on the floor. My mom obviously realizes that something's wrong, goes in and says, hey, call 911. They do immediately. It turns out, and this is the only reason he's alive, they're next door to a fire station. Literally next door. It's like the next building over. So the EMTs are there a minute or two later. They come right in the back door. They figure out immediately what's going on. They get him into the ambulance. By the way, my dad says they're in the ambulance, and the other guy is like not doing, like, one of the EMTs is like in the back with him, and he's not doing well. And my dad's like, what's your problem? The guy's like, oh, I get really sick and car sick when I ride in the back of the ambulance. Like, maybe this isn't the job for you.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway,
or maybe he makes the patient feel better.
Maybe
because they're looking at him like you're sick. Okay, I'm not even as sick as you.
I don't know if that would make me feel better in that moment, but amazingly, they get him right to the hospital and they put in a stent, and he's essentially totally fine. It's really an amazing story. It's what they call the widowmaker artery, and when this goes, blood clot in that artery generally. You know, people don't make it. That's why it has that name. And only because he was that close to the fire station and the hospital was he, you know, able to survive it and seems to be totally fine. So it has been an incredibly strange week. You know, I've talked about you guys have met my dad and been around him. And I think, you know, if you know my dad, you realize how much of my personality stems from his. We heard that
at the end of one of your shows in Arizona, right?
Yeah.
Where Larry Salk was on, and I'm gonna be honest, like he kind of owned it.
Yeah,
he ran with it. He was the man.
I think
you were ranking desserts or something.
Well, of course he was.
Yeah, and he just basically crushed it.
Yeah. Well, we are not carbon copies, and there are some things about our personalities.
No, you've never worn a jock strap. You don't prefer swimming.
It's true.
You don't play in a men's softball league.
Also true. But
you will eat chocolate and peanut butter together.
Obviously, I'm not a heretic, but he, you know, a lot of my personality has been influenced by him, et cetera. And so it was a very, very bizarre week. But thankfully, he's like, oh, it's so strange because I'm getting people like, oh, I'm thinking about you and your dad. I'm like, well, he seems fine now.
Right.
Like, he's mostly now just like milking this. I mean, like, oh, I can't pick that up. Sorry, Jane, you're going to have to do it. And it's like, dad, you can't milk this. So
you want to talk about trying to milk an injury.
Right. Well, right. I told you where I came from. Where do you think I learned it all? He's going to be milking this heart attack for decades now.
Did I just hear Kyle come in and chuckle?
Yeah,
we just learned that Larry Salk is responsible for Mike's personal
trait.
Great.
Who else would it be?
I don't know.
Well, not Jane. She's overly optimistic
about
everything.
I'm nothing like my mom. I don't even know whether she's my real mom.
That's optimism that tends to drive me nuts.
Right. I'm just kidding. There are parts of my personality that come from my mom as well, but yeah, he's going to milk this for a while. And I think we're all prepared for, you know, how the rest of...
Well, that comes with both sides. If he's going to milk it on one end, then he's not going to be able to play softball. You know, it's like we're not going to get that extra bedtime story.
Right.
Like there's choices we make.
He'll find a way to do both. I'm pretty sure. Like he'll have his cake and eat it too, because that's sort of what he does. All right. Anyway, it was...
Well, I call that a blessing and a God wink. That's what I call that.
God wink?
I do.
That's an interesting term. I don't think I've ever heard that. What does that mean?
You never heard that? Well, just a blessing that he was right there at that time with an ambulance nearby, that some can look at that as coincidence. I don't. I think that is I think that there is a bigger power at play. I think that is a God wink that in that moment that he could be right where he was supposed to be to get that help immediately.
Yeah.
And to your point, like that's not the artery. That's not the place that you want to be playing softball, or you want to be, you know, away, or you want to be at home with nobody around,
or whatever, on a plane or anything
exactly.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of the, regardless of what you think, the fragility of just how, you know, the razor's edge that we all walk day to day is pretty crazy.
Could have been Phoenix, Arizona. They don't even have medical facilities.
Do they?
That would have been really, they were like, we have a gun store nearby. Will that help?
Do you think they have real doctors there?
No. No.
I would think, actually, if you're going to have a heart attack, Phoenix would be a pretty good place to do
maybe.
It.
Maybe.
I would think they've got, that's like a pretty normal
scenario. They might actually
have
heart attack clinics that you just go to. They pop
every
up.
Corner, they've got somebody ready to help you out with your heart attack there. So, I don't know. I think he might have even been in better shape there. In sort of talking through the road less traveled, something happened this week. I'm going to transition. This is not about my dad anymore, but just about sports.
We love you, Larry.
Did you
don't lift heavy objects, Larry?
Like he lifted them forever. Like, please. Okay. Did you see Robbie Ray come out and throw two seamers and changeups and
did
to
I believe,
go seven
I think
innings
I read it was
against
like
the Red Sox?
29 times or something like that? Or
he's essentially
percentage.
Never thrown this pitch in the big leagues.
Yep.
He decides, because things haven't been going the way he wants them to, he's just going to take a pitch that he's never thrown in the big leagues, and he dominates one of the better lineups in the league with it for seven innings, has by far his best start of the year.
Yes.
Now, maybe it's because that's not in the scouting report, and they're shocked to see it, and they don't know how to deal. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it blows me away that a major leaguer has, who never uses that pitch ever. It's so good, and he's so good at it without ever practicing it, really, or certainly not as much as he practices the rest of his stuff, that he can go out and dominate a major league lineup with it. First of all,
yep.
Isn't that, can we just stop for a moment and appreciate how incredible that is and how talented these guys are?
Yep.
I think that's one of the most amazing things I can think of about professional athletes, but it got me thinking about the road less traveled with athletes and how many guys could have been completely different players or had completely different careers if they had made a decision differently. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean working hard versus not. That's like in your innate to who you are. I mean, like, what if you decided, not you, what if a person, what if Richard Sherman had never decided to become a cornerback? He's yep. a undrafted wide receiver who yep. maybe never makes the NFL and yes. he's doing something else for a living.
Yep.
What if Paul Sewald doesn't start throwing his fastball higher in the zone or whatever? He's probably out of baseball and he's working as an accountant with his wife in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
What if, and you can kind of go down this road forever. It's a mate. What if Tom Brady decided to play baseball instead of football or, mm-hmm. or there's so many of them and correct. The position changes and the three or four pitches you decide to focus on. What if JD Martinez doesn't become enamored with the launch angle revolution and become one of the best power hitters in the game? And he's nothing.
Yep.
I think it's so amazing how little things like that can make that big a difference.
You call it the fragility of it, right? And I think that was a good segue from the previous conversation about Larry. So funny little story. It didn't work for me, but funny little story along those lines. I don't think I've ever shared this on the air. So I go start my career in Seattle. And then I go to Indy and I come back for my, what turned out to be my last year in the league, my sixth year in that off season, come back after 2 years in Indy of watching Peyton do some of his stuff. And you're just influenced just naturally as Damon was influenced by Marino and Brady. And, you know, as a backup and you watch certainly one of the great ones do it, you're going to be a little influenced by them. And, so, you know, some of the things that kind of had to work back in a little West Coast rhythm, versus the Indy system, very different system. But one of the things that quirky Jim Zorin noticed about me was he took in slow-mo. I never seen that they had a camera close up and was just like looking at my grip. And it was the weirdest thing. And I never even knew that I did this as a thrower, but in super slow-mo, you could see like my fingers literally like came off of the laces for a second, kind of like I was watching a baseball game last night, Giants and Royals, and they had super slow-mo of a third baseman picking up bare hand the ball. And it goes from his palm and then he immediately in like while stepping, you know, slow motion, you got to see it. He gets into a four seam grip so he can throw it across the diamond. Well, I do this when I throw a football and I never knew it. Hmm. And Jim Zorn was convinced. He was convinced, Brock, if you just keep your fingers on it, like, and we're going to focus on this so hard and it is going to change your game. Like, you're just going to get it out that much faster, right? That this is like slowing you down and everything else. So like we spent like weeks, like, okay, just like glued and they had a camera on me, like just glue that grip down, right? Like, this is it. This is going to be the game changer. And it wasn't. No. Unfortunately.
Did it make you worse? Was it harder?
It did.
Yeah. Cause
it
you
did.
Were focused on that.
It did. Yeah. I was just, it was counterproductive. It was one of those things, I'm sure, like golfers do with their putting grips, right? And they, you see them, or baseball players with their stances, right? Jared Kelnick. Well, we're going to be more upright, going to be more hunched over, going to try all of these different little things. But yeah, that was a hilarious.
In this case, it's almost more, you know, because some of those are either execution issues or tactics. The interesting thing to me about some of these other ones is that they're almost more strategic decisions, right? What direction do I want to take my career? We were talking to Albert Breer, and he was pointing out how many children of ex-NFL players are now playing cornerback because they see how many ridiculous athletes are playing wide receiver. And if you want to make it, you want to be with this 150 over here or these five over here, and the amount of money may be similar. Why not go with the five and really shine? And so, yeah, some of it is strategic decision making.
Yep.
Logan Gilbert was saying, I asked him if he fools around with other pitches. He's like, "Oh yeah, I do it a lot, and I mess around with a cutter, and I mess around with a splitter." but like, I wonder if he'd be a completely different pitcher if he was a, like, you know, cutter splitter guy instead. Yeah. Like, if Mariano Rivera doesn't discover the cutter and throw it 95% of the time,
correct?
Who is he?
Yep,
just the guy. Some of the, like, I don't know. You know that I've always been fascinated with the, and I've asked you about this 100 times. The moment you decided you wanted to go for it and become an NFL player,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, I remember going to basketball camps. I'd be like, hey, if you dribble 4 hours a day, you can make it. And you have to make a decision at some point when you're 5'10". Like, well, that's not going to happen.
You'll be Mark Price?
Right. Like, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to dribble 4 hours a day. That would be counterproductive to my life. And I should probably spend those 4 hours doing homework because that's what I'm going to eventually succeed in.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, every professional athlete needs to make the decision of, like, well, I'm good enough. I better spend 4 hours dribbling, or 4 hours, as you've said, lying on your back in the picnic table, throwing the ball up and down and get perfecting the spiral.
Yep.
That the decision to become the throw a cutter 95% of the time guy is kind of similar.
And especially what Ray gave up to do that. I mean, he had, what, 4 strikeouts, his fewest of the year? He's a strikeout pitcher, and he's like, well, it's not getting the job done. I'll give up those accolades and those stats. I got to go out there and give my team a chance.
I kind of love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty
cool. Pretty awesome. And then you get to the point of your life where you're at right now, and Howdy's coming into it. And you,
I'm trying to give Howdy up out of my life. That hasn't worked yet.
And now you have your offspring, and you're watching their journeys, right? And 3 different Heward kids, all wired completely different. And we don't have to tell Macy, like, hey, why don't you go to the gym?
Right.
We have to tell Macy, like, Macy, maybe you should do some homework. Like, maybe that will be a good thing, you know? Like, but she just is just innately, or chasing Haley or whatever. Like, that's just her deal. She sent me a picture or video yesterday. Like, Dad, check this out. And she's in the weight room, like, backward one leg lunges, 125 pounds. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I don't think I could do that right now. Like, that hurts. But she's just into it. And there's nothing that we say or whatever. And you just watch the wiring of your different kids, all different in those regards. And just try to find what they love, you know, and really love to do and go get it.
I remember the first day I met Macy. She was 3. She was 3 years old. We were at Husky Stadium. Yep. She looked exactly like Brock. And she was a mad person, like, just running around Husky Stadium, jumping off stuff, jumping off the stairs and the bleacher seats and all that.
Yep.
And nothing you just said is surprising.
Nope. You can see that wiring pretty early.
Right then. Yes. I think that was also the day we were watching Jake Locker, and I was like, oh, that guy's not good. He can't throw.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was right about both those things.
Yeah.
That day.
And then I've got a little Kyle Brown as a son, too. Kyle, I'll end with this story from Branson, Missouri. Just because Kyle is analytical and takes in everything, I think a little bit like I can every once in a while. What does Titus do at this baseball tournament?
He's looking for the details.
32 teams around the country. I'll send you guys this picture. You're going to get an absolute kick out of it.
He's wearing number 7.
On his card, right? He has a little card. It's all they've got, like, ice cream shop, souvenir shop, cafe, so whatever. If you need to go get some ice cream at night, and so he buys the towel. It's this baseball
Blanca.
He buys this little baseball towel. It's pretty cool. It's baseball with the baseball Parks of America seams, everything else. He buys this little towel so he can put the pins of each team has their own pin. And he's taken it upon himself to trade and make sure he gets every pin from every team, and then puts them on this towel in such a way so they all fit kind of symmetrically. And it's like, that's Titus. That's
Everything right where it belongs.
You know what that is, Brock? That's junk in your house now. That's now something in your house that's in the way.
It's a treasured memory.
It's one of the worst things about you. I got to be honest.
It's junk in your house. That is now something you'll eventually have to throw out.
Howdy, what did you just say?
Just from Larry Saul.
It's truly one of the worst things. I just can't handle it.
I know.
To not memorialize anything that's important in your life.
No, you know what you do? You do all that collecting. You take out your phone, take a picture of it so you have that memory forever, and then throw that stuff right in the trash.
Money well spent.
Throw that stuff right in the trash as soon as you're done. Hey, Kyle. since you're here.
Yeah.
Who should be the starting quarterback for the Seahawks next year? Drew Lock, Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Am I to assume all four are on the roster?
I'm getting
If I had the option
right now, which of those four would you like?
That should be Jimmy Garoppolo.
How come?
Because he has the track record. He's gone to a Super Bowl. Yeah. He's nearly gone to another Super Bowl. Yeah. I love Baker Mayfield. Boy, do I love Baker Mayfield.
You do?
Yes. Okay. Since he was a junior in high school, Mike Leach was all over
right.
This
I remember
guy.
That.
I'm a Baker Mayfield hipster. However,
you liked Baker before it was cool.
It'd be way before it was cool.
Yeah.
Before you even knew who he was. It should be Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay.
If he could get everyone, I mean, come on. Okay. It should not be Drew Lock, and it should certainly not be Geno Smith. Oh, my gosh. And that guy to the Dragons when they
all
come back.
All right. Okay. Well, good. Well, we had a good conversation about it. We'll include you in it next week. How's that? I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. So good to get everybody back together. We missed you guys the last couple of weeks. So we'll be back next week for sure. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See you, everybody.
This is the chopper!